We've been talking to Michael Lamb, who's running for the mayor, and now we're going to go on and talk about some other issues and things that have been in the press and lately at a national level. First topic had to do with what's going on with the case of Terri Schiavo, who's the woman who is severely brain damaged and in a coma, basically unable to do anything. Who's on a feeding tube and has been in the state for 15 years, and her husband wants to end her life. And this has been going through many court cases over, I don't know, 5 or 10 years now. And pretty much 15 years, of course, they've been deciding.
19 judicial opinions have been offered.
And they've pulled out the feeding tube a couple of times and put it back. It's always been some appeal. Well, this time, the actual U.S. Congress has passed a law and signed by President Bush to have the case to interrupt the whole process, the whole natural legal process that had been carried out all this time, and interject the congressional a new law about this case that will allow the federal court to consider the case now. I mean, which is bizarre.
Well, it's being done purely as for political purposes. We'll come back to that.
So I wanted to mention just one thing regarding this story, and then Bob has some other points to make about the law, which was maybe why don't you go ahead and talk about the law that they passed.
I wasn't planning to talk about the new federal law.
Okay.
There's an old law from 1999 that I wanted to mention.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so what I was going to talk about here was there's an article by Eric Bollard of Salon. We've talked about his articles before. I think he's a very good reporter, especially on media issues. And one of the things he noticed was the strange thing that's missing from these discussions. There's been wall-to-wall, apparently, on television, all the networks, about this case over the last few days. And one of the things that's missing, it turns out that if you ask people, Terri's husband has been wanting to have her put to rest, and her parents don't want that to happen. They don't want her feeding tube removed. So they did polls and they asked people, what do you think? Who should make these decisions in these cases? How should this be done? And it turns out that overwhelmingly, people feel that the husband is the one who should be making these decisions, not the parents. And I mean, percentages ranging from 65% to 75% across the boards are saying this. And yet, this, strangely, these polls, many of these polls were done by networks themselves, ABC News, Fox News, MSNBC. Yet, they are not reporting these poll results on their programs. They're sort of explicitly refusing to put them on the air, and it's a strange phenomenon that Bollard kind of blames on sort of politicization of this issue, that once it became a political story in Congress, they sort of stopped being able to talk about it, how unpopular this attempt is in the public. So that's about all I had to say about that. So.
Well, I think the Republican Party is clearly controlled by a very radical extremist faction, and they're making political hay out of this. That's perfectly obvious. And it's really a tragedy that they would do that. But, you know, hey, these are the people who are the experts on moral values, so they're telling us how we should be living our lives. The hypocrisy running through this whole story is outrageous. One in particular that's really risible is Tom DeLay's grandstanding over this, because for the obvious reason that he wishes to distract from the impending criminal charges that are arising, that are coming up against him, and to try to make himself be a good guy. Plus, of course, you know, they're appealing to the rubes and the radical fundamentalists who they're really playing to with all of this business. Now, we know that many of these Republicans, George Bush in particular, who are so radically pro-life, are of course also radically pro-death penalty. And we've talked all about, for example, in the past about George Bush's laughing at the case of Tammy Faye Tucker, I think her name was Tucker, who had murdered her children and was given the death penalty and asked for clemency while he was governor. And And he denied clemency, but he didn't merely deny clemency. He was on television mocking her and imitating her. You know, this is his respect for life. So we know all about this. But it's an interesting thing. So that's one bit of hypocrisy, but that's often been commented on.
Although Santorum actually is coming. Santorum is now backpedaling. Maybe we shouldn't be killing all those people.
We'll come back to Santorum. Yeah. We'll come back to Santorum in a moment. Yeah, Santorum seems to be having a deathbed conversion experience, but we'll come back to that in a minute. But interestingly enough, you know, which has again not been widely reported, is the Texas statute pertaining to removing of life support in cases where the situation is deemed by the medical and judicial authorities to be hopeless, which was signed into law in 1999 by none other than George Bush. And this Texas law, which we link to on the Left Out webpage, if you look at leftout.info on program for March 22nd, we have a link there to the law, and there's an excerpt from Kleiman's website, the Kleiman's log, which talks about this, and I'll read some portion of this to you. So the most important thing about this law is that the Texas law specifically lists, and I'll quote this, the removal of, quotes, artificial nutrition and hydration as among the services that can be discontinued as a result of an inquiry into a case where for termination in the case of life-sustaining support in the case of irreversible conditions. And in fact, the law, get this, the law actually contemplates that a fully competent patient may be served by his healthcare provider. This is now corporate interest. His healthcare provider with a 10-day notice to find another provider or have his plug pulled. It even provides that the patient, him or herself, has the right to attend the committee meeting at which his or her fate is to be decided. That's section 166.046 of the Texas law. And the law provides no substantive guidance other than the provider's decision that the requested life-sustaining care would be inappropriate. Now, of course, we could have a very extended discussion about the merits of life-sustaining care and sustaining care in irreversible cases and how the decision should be made. This is one can have an intelligent discussion about such matters. This is certainly the case. But the point I'm making here is this is a law which favors healthcare providers and allows healthcare providers to pull the plug.
Wait, you're saying – let me understand this. You're saying the healthcare provider – Can pull the plug on a patient who's brain dead.
Well, say provide another provider, you know, get another provider or we're pulling the plug.
A brain dead patient who's just languishing.
Brain dead would be one example, but in a case where the conditions are irreversible. But the interesting thing, the ironic and sad thing is the law even provides that the person who would be victimized by this is permitted to be present at the hearing in which they decide on this in the case that the person is mentally competent.
Yeah.
I think that kind of case would be rather rare, but it's interesting that it is provided for in the law. So my point is that this law was signed by George Bush. And we know that George Bush, of course, wishes to err on the side of life, of course, unless he's snickering at his application of the death penalty.
Yeah.
Or he's paying off his medical care providers who are paying all the bills and getting him elected into office. So if you have a look at it, you might find this interesting. It's funny that his presumption in favor in life, what limited range of circumstances it tends to apply, namely those in which it's politically convenient. This is another Karl Rove job start to finish. Well, enough on that. Everyone's been talking about this case. Listeners are welcome to call us at 412-268-9728 and discuss these or any other topics, or to send electronic mail to bob@leftout.info. Coming back to Rick Santorum, some of you may have noticed, and Danny, you commented earlier, that he seems to be having a deathbed conversion experience, by which I mean his political deathbed conversion experience, because he's clearly feeling the flames and has suddenly realized that, you know, maybe after all, come to think of it, maybe, you know, the death penalty is over-applied, and maybe we shouldn't be applying the death penalty quite so often. Oddly enough, this conversion comes right before an election year. At a moment where he's about to go down in flames because of his outrageous statements and policies, including his unequivocal backing of the privatization, calling a spade, the privatization of Social Security, which is hugely unpopular. So all I can say is, politically speaking, let's make sure, listeners, to ram it home to Senator Santorum and put him behind us. And don't fall for this nonsense about him suddenly being so concerned about capital punishment. Next thing you know, he may be reconsidering gay marriages.
Why do you say he's going down in flames? Are there any?
Well, yes. So I have some. There's a new poll result that came out today, which I wanted to mention to our listeners. We have a call?
Okay. No.
Okay.
Go ahead. What was he?
Sorry, I got distracted. So we have a new poll result that comes out, and the poll result that is to do with several issues relevant to Pennsylvania politics. One is a poll on the Senate race between Bob Casey Jr. and good old Senator Santorum. And these results are showing, and now there's much to be said here, but the results are showing, this is the so-called Keystone poll, I think it's called. Yes, it's a Keystone poll, and shows Santorum over Casey 44-43. But this is a situation where only 20% of the sample was from Philadelphia or southeastern Pennsylvania, and whereas 33% of the voters were from that region, and the results are not adjusted for turnout. So
yeah,
this
the campaign hasn't even started yet,
and the campaign hasn't even started yet. Casey has announced that he's running, but that's it. I mean, Casey had done, to my knowledge, precisely nothing other than to say he's running.
Yeah.
And Rendell orchestrated that Barbara Hafer would be pulling out of the race. And so we can hope for that. The other interesting thing is to quote from Daily Cause, that Pennsylvanians hate Bush's Social Security reform, and I'll quote that. They by a 50-40 margin, they approve of diverting some money into private accounts. When asked, do you approve or disapprove of the way George W. Bush is handling the Social Security issue, they said 44% strongly disapprove, 12% somewhat disapprove. That's a total of 56% disapprove, 31% either approve somewhat or strongly, and 13% for some reason say they do not know. So this is good. This is another issue that we can attach to Senator Santorum, mm-hmm. the Honorable Senator Santorum.
Right. He was going around giving
Western Pennsylvania
on the roadshow.
Oh, he's a big privatizer. Yeah. Oh, he's a big privatizer. Yeah. He's very much in favor of privatizing Social Security. He's also very much in favor of having the public school system in Penn Hills pay for his children to go to private school as well. But that's another.
Controversy about where he lives. He's claiming residency.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
He claimed. Well, let's not go there again.
Okay, fine.
There's a number of issues that we can attach to the dear old senator, and I urge our listeners to pay attention and pay close attention and do our best to get Senator Santorum out of office. All right. So on to the next topic, Danny.
So here we have a another topic about what's going on in the U.S. Congress. Mm. There was an excellent report written by Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, who's a ranking minority member of the House Rules Committee. About what's going on in Congress these days, and it's entitled "Broken Promises: The Death of Deliberative Democracy." And it documents the abuses of the legislative process by the House Republicans, including using restrictive rules to preclude amendments to bills, allowing only one day per week to debate on bills of substance, deliberately scheduling emergency and late-night sessions to make it difficult for the opposition to participate in the legislative process, granting blanket waivers to conference reports without even providing enough time for members to read what has been decided. So this report is, a long, detailed report documenting all of these things and explaining how really this is the introduction, which I read, is this is the worst Doesn't she say this is the worst?
Oh, by far, yes.
By far, Congress in the last century or something.
There are a number of graphs in there which document the abuses that the Congress is making. We've often commented on that the Republicans have turned the Congress into the Politburo, which is really a rubber stamp organization for executive policies, and we've talked about that before and left out. But this report from Louis Slaughter is really quite interesting, in part because it's so well documented. It's about 140 pages, if I remember correctly. You can find it on the Left Out website, leftout.info, which he talks about the abuses that the Republicans have been making of parliamentary procedure in order to ensure that there are no debates, no amendments, and that votes are hidden so that people don't have to take a particular stand on controversial issues.
And how's that?
They slip through in the middle. Well, she documents in great detail a number of parliamentary maneuvers that are used in order to accomplish this. And so there's no accountability. So, for example, there was on one of the budget bills, there was a rider, an amendment attached during the middle of the night, and that no one to this day owns up to, which exempts Pfizer, I think it was, or one of the big pharmaceutical companies, or Eli Lilly. It was Eli Lilly. It exempts Eli Lilly from civil liability in the case of using thimerosal as a preservative for vaccinations.
Oh, this mercury thing.
No one owns up to it. It somehow magically got in there. So, and then this is also ties in with the threats to do away with the filibuster, on which, interestingly enough, there is a very thoughtful op-ed piece in yesterday's New York Times
by
Ian Duncan Smith, who is a conservative former conservative party leader in Britain, who ordinarily his views I wouldn't ordinarily subscribe to, who's written an essay in the New York Times about what is called in Britain in the House of Commons is called the guillotining, which is the cloture rule and filibuster, and the effects that it has on legislative process, and I encourage our listeners to read it.
But that reminds me also, George Will apparently came out, the arch-conservative columnist, also came out against changing
doing
the
away
rules.
With the filibuster, because, time goes on and the tables get turned. Well, that's all we have today on Left Out. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you once again to Molly Meyer for producing our program, and thank you to Michael Lamb for appearing today. We will be back in 2 weeks' time. Thanks for listening.